firefighting. I bet you don't think very much about it. Oh, you drive by a firehouse, you see some fire trucks and some guys waiting for some action, usually. How about the history of firefighting? That's our topic this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. So glad that you joined us here on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. I'm your host, John Pierce. Working the board for us is our Director of Operations, Neil Heaver. The book is called Firefighting in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, 1741 to 1917. So we're talking about some deep history here in the Lehigh Valley. We have three authors of the book. Two of them are my guests this evening. One of the authors, Chris Aileen, unable to be here, so we give a shout out to Chris. He is a local historian and firefighter from Bethlehem. And Nancy and Karen, my two guests, you are not firefighters, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
All right. But Chris is the firefighter of the trio. After he left high school, went into the U.S. Navy, and then joined the Bethlehem Fire Department and quickly developed a reputation as the unofficial curator of artifacts and firefighting lore within the department. It says that he manages a series of display cases in city fire stations, which doesn't surprise me, but I didn't know there were display cases in the fire departments. Are they open to the public?
Yes, they are.
So yes. We could just wander in and take a look at history of firefighting.
I'd be good
believe,
to call.
I believe yeah. It would be better to call, but mm-hmm. the two that have the display cases I'm thinking about are Memorial on Broad Street and the Schwader on East 4th Street. Schwader has the biggest collection, and if you call ahead, Chris may be able to take you on a tour of his little museum room.
Beautiful. All right. That was the voice of Nancy Ruttman, who is one of my guests, and the other one is Karen Samuels. Now, Nancy discovered an interest in American history as a teenager during the nation's bicentennial in 1976. Okay, so you're bragging you were that young to be a teenager back then. Okay, I got it. Along with her parents, she began assembling a collection of historical postcards, books, photographs, and ephemera that tell the story of the Lehigh Valley region. So are you a collector or a hoarder?
I am definitely a collector. Right. I have very specific things I look for, and my collection is very well organized. So,
all right. You're an organizer, too. You have to be to put a book together, don't mm-hmm. you? And, Nancy, you work on other publications, too.
Yes.
What else do you do besides writing this book about firefighting?
I am a magazine copy editor and production specialist, so I work on three different magazines, and I get an occasional book project also.
Excellent. So this is about a story of the Lehigh Valley region. Your collection now numbers in the thousands. Man, how do you – are they all at home?
No, I have a storage space.
Oh, I bet you do. Is it all organized that you can find anything at any point?
Somewhat right now. I hope to get it better organized in the future. But
what a job. Just thousands of items.
Yes.
It's a little museum. And you have designed two books on the history of Bethlehem, Tuned for Praise, about the Bethlehem area Moravian Trombone Choir, which mm-hmm. I didn't know about, and the Moravian Christmas Puts. You live in Emmaus and work as freelance copy editor and publication production specialist. So welcome, Nancy Ruttman.
Thank you.
My other guest is Karen Samuels. Karen sitting very patiently, awaiting her turn. She's the author or co-author of seven books in the Bethlehem area history and a Keystone Press Award-winning newspaper columnist. Samuels has appeared on television and radio to discuss her books and columns, earned an advanced degree in local history from Oxford University. After retirement as a guidance counselor and an art teacher, Samuels became involved with the efforts to restore a one-room schoolhouse in Lower Saucon Township. How interesting. And in writing grants for funds to restore the structure, she found that she had a knack for historical research. So she devotes full time to studying the history of the Lehigh Valley. And Karen, you live in an old stone farmhouse with your husband.
Yes.
Who is not as old as the house. Well, let's give a shout out to John and dog Ellie.
And right. We have another dog, and it's a rescue dog,
all right.
Louie.
I'll bet it's a Dalmatian.
No.
No. No cigar for me on that one. Do we know why Dalmatians are the dog of firefighters?
We were trying to remember why that happened. We know why dogs were used by firehouses, but we're not sure why Dalmatians particularly. Dogs were used in the days of the horse-drawn fire equipment to chase other horses and wagons off the street and make way for the fire machinery. And the crowds also, because crowds used to impede the progress of the firefighters, so the dogs would nip at their heels till they got out of the way.
Oh, interesting.
Newspaper accounts would mention the crowds and give numbers, you know, hundreds, thousands of people in the streets, so that it was always, you know, I'm not saying it was boring back then, but if you had a fire down the street, you were going to go out and look and see what was happening.
Not like today. Today we just want those sirens to go away and leave us in peace. But interesting, back in the day of the horse-drawn carriages. And you have some pictures in this beautiful book. The book that we're talking about this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse is called Firefighting in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, 1741 to 1917. It's a softback book, 136 pages, and you have its glossy paper, which I think is very impressive, and loads of pictures of fire equipment, engines, pictures of men who were the firefighters sitting there in their uniforms of old, right? With many buttons on their on their uniforms. So what do you think was the impetus to get you started, Nancy, with researching firefighting in Bethlehem?
Well, actually, Chris and Karen came to me. Chris had wanted to do a book for years because, as you said, he's been collecting photos and memorabilia and artifacts from the department for, you know, 25 years. And he wanted to do a book. And so he approached Karen. We all met on Facebook.
All right.
Funnily enough.
Oh, you're modern folks.
There's a group called You Know You're From Bethlehem on Facebook. And Karen and I answer a lot of history questions on there, and Chris saw us on there and thought, you know, we'd be good people to collaborate on a book. So he contacted Karen, and then they both contacted me because they knew I worked in publishing. And
so that's how the three of you met.
Yes.
In person, but on Facebook, we were great friends.
And then I also have, you know, this collection of photos, and part of that collection was a whole number of photos that my parents had got at auction when the Antique Fire Museum on Main Street in Bethlehem closed. They auctioned off the contents. My parents bought a lot of the photos, which were Bethlehem-related. And so I had those, and I'd been meaning to do something with them for years. And Chris and Karen came along. I thought, oh, finally I can get to use these photos.
Wow.
So a lot of those are in the book.
And so interest in your history goes back at least to your parents and your family.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps before that. And Karen, what about your interest, particularly in firefighting?
I would say that Chris brought this interest to me because I was interested in it, and I had researched the firehouse down the street from the studio that, you know, I had written a short history of it. But I was interested in it, but it wasn't something I had spent a lot of time researching. So this, I always love learning about new things, and this was an opportunity to learn about firefighting.
And we talked about that off the air, the fact that, Karen, you're getting into an area, is it Karen?
Karen.
Getting into an area now with more research.
Right.
And you don't know anything about, what's that area?
Well, that, I'm working with Jody Keim, who's a photographer. We're doing a book on the Lehigh Valley, and it's, what I'm writing is based on her photographs, and it'll be a fundraiser for the Bethlehem Area Public Library. So it's something new again that I, you know, a little history, but also modern.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that, what's the focus of that history?
It is really, the main focus is what a beautiful place the Lehigh Valley is. That's that's what it's all about.
Okay.
All the towns, the cities, and
yeah, you're going to have beautiful pictures in there. It'll be wonderful.
Yes.
And so this is Karen Samuels and Nancy Ruttman, my guests this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. We're talking about the history of firefighting in Bethlehem, particularly. Nancy, would you say that your interest in history is also focused on the Lehigh Valley?
Yes.
All right. So both of you are in that area, as well as Chris Aileen, I presume.
Mm-hmm.
So all about the Lehigh Valley. Your book covers a very specific time period in the firefighting history of Bethlehem. And it starts in the year 1741 and up to the First World War, 1917. Why did you choose these dates?
Well, we started out thinking we were going to be able to cover the entire history of firefighting in Bethlehem up to today, and we realized that we had too much material, good material, and we didn't want to give up a lot of the material to make a smaller book. So we decided, well, we're going to end it in 1917, which is when basically the volunteer firefighting system came to an end and the city fire department started, because Bethlehem actually was a combination of four different boroughs, and they merged, you know, between 1918 and 1920. 1918 is when the city fire department was founded. So we're taking the history up till the first settlers in Bethlehem, up until the point where the volunteer system ended. And then our next book, which we're working on now, will take the history of the Bethlehem City Fire Department from 1918 to 2018. So that's 100 years.
And that's your next book that you're working on right now.
That's right.
And we don't know exactly when that's going to be published. That's like asking somebody writing a PhD dissertation, when are you going to finish, right? So we can look forward to that in the near future,
a
second book. And you started in 1741 because?
That was when Moravians first picked out the site for the settlement and built the first house. So starting from then, they almost immediately started making provisions for firefighting, you know, because they had open fires everywhere in their building. So that was
good point.
Important. So they tended to build their buildings after they built the Gemeinhaus, which was made of wood. It's a log building. Most of their other buildings were made of stone, and part of that reason was fire protection. They were very conscious of fire.
And if we go back to the beginnings of Bethlehem, we're talking the Moravians, because they were the very first. So in this book that you've written about firefighting in Bethlehem, did you make some surprising discoveries when you were doing your research? I bet you did.
Yes.
What about it, Karen?
Every step of the way. Well, the one thing that I was interested in is what caused fires. And it seemed like every time there was a new invention, like electricity or gas furnaces, every new invention came with problems where there would be wiring that would be, you know, everything was new, and they would there were a lot of mistakes made, and they would cause fires. When the Moravians, you know, had their settlement, their big fear probably was lightning, and the fireplaces. If someone, they were very careful to have people watching the fireplaces. They have fire watchers, because as a community, they were able to do that. Whereas someone, a settler off on a farm, you know, on a 400 acres, only they were isolated, and they didn't have someone that could watch, you know, watch the buildings. But with the Moravians, that's why they were so early, they were able to put in place fire prevention.
You mentioned the fireplaces. Are these huge openings that you would see when you go into one of the old, really old buildings, mm-hmm. and you could walk in there and not
like
touch
Burnside.
Your head.
You ever see the kitchen in Burnside? A huge fireplace, you know, because that's what they needed. They needed that fireplace for cooking and washing.
Did they have kitchens in separate buildings so to prevent problems from fire?
They did. You know, to stray a little bit from Bethlehem, on a lot of farms, you'll find kitchens in a separate, what they call a summer kitchen. But in Bethlehem, they had separate dining facilities for the different Bethlehem. Early on, the townspeople lived in choirs, which meant that all the single women lived together, all the single men lived together, all the married people lived together. So each choir had its own dining hall. And so the kitchen would be near the dining hall. So there wasn't a kitchen in each individual person's
A central
residence.
Kitchen for, it makes sense, it's sort of a
cafeteria
idea. But
they did have, fires for heating. They did use a lot of cast iron stoves, so that was a closed fire, but they did have open fires in other places. Mm. And there was a lot of industry in Bethlehem. There was, shoemaking and silversmithing and blacksmithing and
a lot of chemicals,
tannery, and all those things required fire, and so they were very conscious of it.
And when you say industry, nowadays we think of big building, Bethlehem Steel, and so on. Well, what you're talking about is artisans, just with their little shops. Mm. So, and each one of those shops had to have fire going in order to do their work. So it was a big issue, was not permitting fire to get out of control in those days.
Even if you think of women cooking, they had these voluminous skirts, which were not fireproof.
Right.
And occasionally their skirts would catch fire.
Terrible accidents. Yeah.
And women would always wear those skirts. To me, that seems as if you're stepping out. You're going to make a statement in society by wearing this beautiful hoop skirt. But they would wear them.
Well, no,
even
they
at
wore
home.
Skirts
all the time. Uh-huh. Wow, that's what they had to wear. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse here on WDIY. I'm John Pierce. My guests this evening are Nancy Ruttman and Karen Samuels, who are co-authors of a book, a beautiful book, that I have in my hands right here, called Firefighting in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, 1741 to 1917. These are historians who have written the book along with Chris Aileen, who is a firefighter. Is he or he was a firefighter?
He is.
He's still today. Mm-hmm. And so it's a fascinating history, and we'll get more into this after we take this break. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
The many choices and real voices on WDIY are made possible with support from our generous, sustaining members. An automatic monthly gift of $10 on your credit card is an easy way to become a WDIY member and support the programs you love. Set up your monthly sustaining membership gift today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you.
The book that we're talking about on Lehigh Valley Discourse this evening is called Firefighting in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, 1741 to 1917. It was published in 2017. Here's a quote from Don Cunningham, former mayor and councilman, City of Bethlehem. Years before the Declaration of Independence was written, the people of Bethlehem stepped forward to protect their community from the ravages of fire. They have never stopped. And next to that quotation is a water bucket. Tell us about water buckets.
Well, that was one of the first tools that the townspeople had to fight the fires. And Moravians, being the organized, systematic people that they were, had a system whereby every family had its own fire bucket. And when they would hear the fire alarm, which in those days was either a bell, which would be in the belfry of the bell house, or they had a watchman who would have a rattle and he would spin this rattle and it would wake people up so they would know there was a fire. When they heard that, they were supposed to put their bucket out in front of their house so that the firefighters who were responding could come running down the street, grab all the buckets on their way to the fire.
Wow.
And they also had, in certain buildings, stashes of communal buckets. So they had 50 numbered buckets that were under the old chapel. And there's a few of those still remaining with the number still on. The one one of them pictured in the book was John Heckewelder's personal fire bucket. John Heckewelder was a famous Moravian missionary who lived on Heckewelder Place. And that was his personal bucket. Those buckets were made of leather and coated with many layers of tar to waterproof them. And then some of them had decorated painting on, and they had a wooden rim to be strengthened. But they were very heavy when they were full because they probably held about 2 gallons. So what they would do in the event of a fire was they'd have a line of men and boys who would hand the full buckets hand over hand up to the people fighting the fire, and then they'd have a line of women and girls handing the empty buckets back down to whoever was filling them. So they
all
had a pretty
organized
system.
Yes.
And so that
was the bucket brigade.
The bucket brigade.
All right. I've heard that term.
And that, you know, buckets were used until the 20th century for fighting some fires.
Oh.
If you want to see a beautiful collection of firefighting, including the leather buckets, which we went to the Kemmerer Museum and they gave us permission to take photographs of these great buckets and helmets, and that's a good place to go, the Kemmerer Museum.
And so you have some of those pictures in the book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. The Kemmerer Museum here in Bethlehem. What's the address over there, or what's the street?
It's on New Street.
New Street. Okay.
Almost near the library, where New Street hits the library, but
right.
Don't know the address.
Okay, right there. Yeah, that's a beautiful little museum. And it doesn't take that long to see pretty much everything in the museum, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how about the colorful volunteer firefighters that you learned about?
Well, there were some real characters, you know, starting with, I remember William Yowie because I researched that book on the Moravian Christmas puts, and William Yowie was, his parents were the proprietors of the Eagle Hotel, which was the hotel that was on the site where the Hotel Bethlehem is now. It was the biggest and most famous hotel in Bethlehem, and he would create these putzes that were 20, 30, 40 feet long and 10 feet deep, and they had live running water and, you know, live plants in them, and people would come from all over to see these putzes. They even built a special room on the side of the hotel with a glass top so that people could come throughout the year.
People still can see that at Central Moravian Church,
yes,
correct?
During
and it's Christmas time,
Advent,
particularly.
Yes.
Yeah, Advent.
So he became famous for that. Everybody in town knew him. He was elected the second fire chief of the borough of Bethlehem. They had, up until that time, they had fire marshals and fire wardens. But you know, in the 1870s, they decided we need a fire chief. And they elected Enoch Phillips. He was the first, but he resigned after only a few weeks. I guess he moved out of town. And William Yowie was elected, and he was the one who, at some point, the borough wanted to get rid of the Perseverance fire engine, which was the oldest fire engine in town. And it had been held by the Perseverance Fire Company for so many years, more than 100 years, and they were very protective of it. And the borough marched into the firehouse, and they took the fire engine and placed it in a museum. And the firefighters were furious, of course, because they had not been notified. And William Yowie was, you know, as the fire chief, he resigned in protest. So he, you know, he was very respected for doing that because the firefighters were some of the pillars of the community.
All right. This was an old engine that someone figured was no longer serviceable.
Right.
But the firefighters thought that it was.
It was not serviceable, but it was their pride and joy because it was the oldest. They believed it was the oldest fire engine in the country. It actually isn't, but they believed it was, and they had taken care of it for 100 and right. some years.
So
and,
what did they want done with it, if not
They
the
wanted
museum?
To keep it in their firehouse as, you know, their
pride and joy.
Pride and joy.
Yeah.
And so they were very angry that it got moved, and eventually their feathers were calmed down, and they so he led that revolt. He's also famous for his daughter, who was
May Yowie.
She was a stage star, musical theater, and she became famous all over the world. She was known as Madcap May.
Her what biggest, era is this?
1870s, 80s.
Yeah.
Okay.
She married Lord Hope.
Yes.
And became the owner of the Hope Diamond. And
which
so that was
has a, you know, a reputation. Whoever owns it has bad luck.
Oh, and that is the famous Hope
famous
Diamond?
Famous Hope Diamond.
And there was a Lord Hope. That's the reason it's called the Hope Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So she, you know, he was her father, and then he also, he had a checkered career as a private detective. He was a detective for the county, during which his most famous case was a double axe murder in Bethlehem Township, and then he became a detective for the Central Railroad of New Jersey. And it was eventually discovered that he had been embezzling money and forging checks. And his parents paid off some of the debts, but he eventually had to leave town in disgrace. And he apparently died in Colorado or Montana when he was 45. So
some colorful characters.
Very interesting history in only 45 years.
Right. So it's interesting that they at first did not have a fire chief. They had fire marshals to start off, and then they grew to the point where they needed someone to ride herd over the whole town.
In the early days, the church and the town were the same thing. But when they established a borough as a separate entity from the church, they needed a whole other structure to run it because, you know, they couldn't. The church elders couldn't make the rules anymore, so they had to have their own hierarchy. So early on, it would have been a fire warden or a fire marshal, but then after they became a borough, they needed more of a structure.
Right. Firefighting in Bethlehem and the history thereof is our topic this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. You mentioned the word perseverance. Where did that word come from in the firefighting history?
Well, that was actually a common name for fire companies. It's interesting how I'm not sure whether the fire company was named after the engine or the engine company was named after the fire company. But what happened was Bethlehem imported its first fire engine in 1763. And at first it was just called Die Feuerspritze, which is German for fire engine. And they had brought it over themselves on a ship that they owned called the Hope. And
probably from Germany.
It was actually purchased in London.
Oh.
There were Moravians in London. They sent somebody over there specifically to purchase it, brought it back, and put it into service. And that was the only fire engine in town until 1791 when they bought two more fire engines. One was a larger engine and one was a small engine that they called the Das Butterfass, which is the butter churn, because it was a small portable engine, looked just like a butter churn. So now they had two engines. They just couldn't call it the fire engine. They had to call the first one the yellow fire engine, and the second one, the blue fire engine, or the Gelbe Feuerspritze and the Blaue Feuerspritze. So then, you know, they got tired of using those big long terms every time they wanted to refer to the fire engine. So they separated into two companies about 1809, and they called the first company the Perseverance and the second company the Diligence. Then the engines became known as the Perseverance engine and the Diligence engine. And those two engines are still in Bethlehem, and you can see them at the Moravian Museum. There's a special fire annex underneath the old chapel where they have them on display. So you can, you know, anytime the museum's open, you can get a tour. But that's how those two engines got their name.
And that is not the Kemmerer Museum. That's a different one. Right? Is it in that same area?
Yeah. Half a block away.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And we could see those original and fire engines.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And they came from Europe, at least the first three that we know about.
Mm-hmm.
One came and then two more
in
those days. Wow.
And when you asked about the name of the fire companies, that was, I found when I was doing research, that many cities would use the same names, and that became like you would search for a certain name, and it would come up, you know, across the United States in various fire departments. I don't know. There were just popular names for naming, you know, a firefighting group.
You do your Google search, and you would come up with a good answer.
Yeah.
Right. There were synonyms. So some of them were synonyms for volunteer, like good intent, goodwill are synonyms for volunteer. Then there's the Reliance, there's Liberty.
Positive
terms.
Yes.
Life goes on. We're going to get past this fire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fire companies were also social organizations. They were like mainly in the early days, it was the creme de la creme of the town that would join the fire department, a fire company, and they got very competitive with each other. And, you know, to see who would get to the fire first and who had the first. They still call it first water.
It still goes on, actually, today.
It still goes on.
Who gets there first?
There's more of a structure now that, you know, prevents mayhem.
Right.
But back then, a lot of people would show up to fires who were not authorized to fight fires, and they would attempt to help and get in the way of the people actually who knew what they were doing.
Right.
So eventually they started getting, started wearing clothing and hats and things that would set apart the authorized firefighters. And I think in 1872, Bethlehem issued its first official badges so that the authorized firefighters would be clearly identified and anybody else could be forced to leave the scene.
So uniforms came into being about that time. That's interesting. I never thought about just hordes of people coming and trying to help, but more being in the way than helping. And they didn't have training to do what they needed to do for these fires.
There was a fire in the old Moravian Mill, which was the predecessor of the Luckenbach Mill, which is still standing. There were bystanders who were just trying to help save the buildings around the mill. And so they were throwing out furniture and things from these buildings. And the newspaper the next day said they caused a lot of damage that was unnecessary because they were just overzealous in what they were trying to do.
And breaking the furniture as it was thrown out.
And you can see with some of the photos in the book, like especially the West Bethlehem one, the Pure Oil Fire, people are lined up on First Avenue in West Bethlehem. It's just amazing to see the crowds out there watching a fire. In fact, you want to say, back up, don't.
Yeah.
They're getting too close.
That particular fire, there were tanker cars full of fuel, oil, sitting along railroad tracks near Union Boulevard. And these people were standing. If any of those tankers would have blown, they would have been, you know, just incinerated. So there was no, you know, effort to control crowds at that point.
Well, I think I have the answer to my question. You two and Chris, Aileen, formed a publishing company, and it's called Perseverance. So that's where you got the name from.
It was suitable to the whole publishing industry. Right. It's a lot of work to get a book out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. And you've done one already that I have in my hands, and it's Firefighting in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania from 1741 to 1917. And once again, you chose the First World War period to end the book because there was something happening in the development of firefighting. What was it?
The city of Bethlehem was actually incorporated in 1918, and it was formed from four different boroughs combining into one. So 1917 was when the borough system was dissolved, and then the city of Bethlehem Fire Department started in 1918.
All right.
All joined together, they had enough people to be called a city. Before there were boroughs, and then the four came together, and it could be officially a city.
Right, and you have divided your book into four chapters, the North Side, the South Side, the West Side, and Northampton Heights. Maybe we'll ask you, when we come back from our break, about Northampton Heights, which is a new term to me. I didn't know about that one. It no longer exists. We're going to continue talking about the history of firefighting in Bethlehem after we hear some important words. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, John Pierce. Neil Heaver, our operations director, is our engineer this evening. And it's a fascinating topic that goes back into Bethlehem's history of firefighting. We'll continue in just a moment.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
The book is called Firefighting in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, 1741 to 1917. The authors are Chris Aileen, Nancy Rutman, and Karen Samuels. Nancy and Karen are with me this evening talking about the book. And from the back of the book, I read, through contemporary news accounts, archival records, and rare artifacts and photographs, Firefighting in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, 1741 to 1917, tells the story of how a town battled the elements and won. The story begins with the bucket brigades of the Moravian community during the colonial period, soon supplemented with two of the country's earliest fire engines. Nancy, we were talking off air about these first fire engines and what was the impetus for their coming on board. This was a huge change from horses to motorized vehicles. That's what we're talking about.
Well, that wasn't until much later. What the earliest fires, the earliest major fire in the town of Bethlehem was a fire that was caused by a lightning strike. As Karen mentioned, that was one of the things they had to worry about. The Moravians had a communal farm, which was about where the big star is at the corner of Market Street and Main Street in Bethlehem, right in the middle of the street. Around that square, there was a communal farm, and all the buildings were interconnected. Well, in July of 1761, lightning struck the barn. They had just brought in the harvest for the season. The barn was filled with, you know, their whole harvest for the year, and that was what got them through the winter. So they, you know, were terrified that they were going to starve to death because they wouldn't have enough grain to last for the winter. So they, with bucket brigades, they put out this fire. They were forking, burning hay out the, you know, out the doors and everything. They managed to save the barn, and the stone wall stood for another 100 years after that. But the very next day, they circulated a petition to purchase a fire engine because they knew that you know, bucket brigades were not going to cut it because the buildings in town were getting bigger and bigger and there were more and more people. So they needed an actual fire engine. And so Timothy Horsfield, who was the SOAR keeper at the time, circulated this letter, I mean this petition, that raised money to purchase a fire engine. And they raised 70 pounds within a short amount of time, which was a lot of money. The reason we know this is because that very petition is still in the collection of the Moravian Church Archives in Bethlehem. So you can see in the book, we have reproduced part of that petition. Moravians kept records on everything, and that's one of the reasons we know as much as we do about what went on back then. So they put together this petition and subscription, raised this money, and things being what they were in the Moravian Church, things moved along very slowly. They needed a committee. They needed to do research on the best fire engine. And so they sent people to Philadelphia to look at fire engines and determine which kind was the best to buy. And then finally they sent somebody to England to purchase a fire engine, brought it back on the ship, Hope. And unfortunately, 8 days before it arrived in town, there was a fire in the oil mill. And this was in 1763, and it was during the French and Indian War. And Indians were at first blamed for it because, you know, the Indians had been raiding communities all around the Lehigh Valley, scalping people, burning their farms. And so it was at first blamed on the Indians, but the Moravians later determined that it was actually local settlers who had burned down this mill, because they did not like the fact that the Moravians were missionaries to the Indians and that they were converting Indians and, you know, helping establish Indian Moravian settlements. And so the Moravians thought that, you know, the settlers thought the Moravians were traitors, and so they burned down this mill. So, you know, 8 days after that happened, the fire engine appears in town, and it's too late to save that building, but at least they had it for future use.
And this was about what time?
1763. And then, you know, the first engines were all hand-operated. They were not drawn by horses. They were pulled by men through the streets by hand, and they were filled by hand. That's what the bucket brigades were used for, to fill the tanks of the fire engine. And then they didn't even have hoses. What they had was a brass nozzle on the top of the engine. The chief engineer would stand on top of the engine. So he's about 10 feet off the ground, maybe somewhere between 6 to 10 feet off the ground. He's standing, pointing this nozzle at the fire, which, you know, if you know how hot fires can get, he'd have to be pretty close to the fire to get the spray anywhere near where it needed to go. They didn't have hoses until 1817, so between 1763 and 1817, they had to point these nozzles at the fire. 1817, they imported a hose. Again, we have a record in the Moravian Archives, a letter describing the hoses, so we know that that's when they came in. The first ones were made of hemp, and they were not very strong. Later on, they developed leather riveted hoses. The next biggest innovation in fire engines came along in 1869, when Bethlehem got its first steam engines. And those were very, very heavy machines. They were, again, they did not contain the water for fighting the fire, but they had a boiler on them that was heated up with coal or wood. And at first they were pulled by hand through the streets, but they were so heavy that, and the streets were all mud then, they were not paved. So they quickly realized they could not use these engines to their full potential without horses. So that's when the big movement to get horses came. You'll see year after year, pleas in the newspaper from firefighters, "We need horses, we need horses." And finally the borough broke down and purchased horses to pull these engines. So that was in 1869, and on the north side, on the south side, they didn't get a steam engine until 1903. So they were using hand engines way up until 1903. They had the advantage on the south side. Their water source was high up in the hills, so it worked by gravity. So they didn't need the pumping power that North Bethlehem did, because North Bethlehem's water source was down by Monocacy. All of it had to go uphill, whereas South Bethlehem had it, the water had to come downhill, so they didn't need a steam pumper. 1903, they get their first steam engine on the south side. It wasn't only about 12 years later when the first motorized fire truck comes to North Bethlehem. And between 1915 and 1920, virtually all of the hand equipment disappeared. They all motorized. They had motorized pumpers and ladder trucks, hose wagons. So they did away with most of the horse-drawn equipment
and
in a relatively short period.
That's the point of progress in firefighting that sort of invited you all to stop your history at 1917.
And the combining of the four borough departments into one, it was modernized chiefly through the efforts of the first mayor, who was Archibald Johnston, and he hired, I'm going to let Karen describe it because she's talked about this a lot. He hired the former chief of the South Bethlehem Fire Department to run the new Bethlehem Fire Department.
Albert, known as Bertie Anderson, was an amazing leader in the firefighting department in that Bethlehem Steel eventually hired him for like a year and a half to get their fire department in shape. Before that, he was the fire chief of South Bethlehem, and before that, he was a firefighter for the Lehigh Hook and Ladder Company, and his father was the founder of that, so it ran in the family, firefighting. But until the 40s, he became the fire chief for the entire Bethlehem Fire Department from 1917 into the 40s. And he got involved with, in the 20s and 30s, involved with meeting with school children, doing fire preventative education. That was a big deal. He was a great leader in that he kept in touch with other states to find out what's the most accurate way to prevent fires. And he was an amazing man.
What's his name?
His name is Albert Anderson.
All right. So he's one of the heroes of the 20th century, anyway, of
yes.
this whole sweep of firefighting in Bethlehem.
Yes, he was. He was, well-regarded.
Right.
He also was a great athlete. No one could go up a ladder faster than him.
Oh, wow.
He was a baseball player, football. So those were his younger years. And
right.
He was so well-liked. He was in charge of physical education for the schools of South Bethlehem. He was
all over the map.
Yes, yes.
With helping out in Bethlehem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've mentioned the four boroughs. So North Side, South Side, West Side, and Northampton Heights. So what was Northampton Heights?
It was formed by necessity because there just wasn't enough in South Bethlehem. Bethlehem Steel was drawing many immigrants to come and live there and work. It was a place where you could find a job. And they just, there wasn't enough places to stay. So every nook and cranny was taken up by a border. And so what would happen is that the housing would just spread along the Lehigh River, would just go further east to, and that eventually became the section further east, which was surrounded by Bethlehem Steel Works and mills, and that eventually became Northampton Heights. And they had to struggle because they were the newest immigrants. They had the least amount of money. It took them longer to get their own fire department. It was 1906 when they finally started that. Their wives and daughters had a variety show to pay for their uniforms.
Oh, wow.
So and also the housing was put up quickly. A lot of it was made of wood, and they were living, you know, their houses were in danger whenever there was a fire in the area. So it was a real concern to them. And what happened was Bethlehem Steel needed to eventually, we're going to talk about this in the next book, but Bethlehem Steel needed to modernize, and they needed that land where Northampton Heights was located. So working with the city, they considered the whole area blighted and paid these different homeowners to move elsewhere and tore it all down, you know, within days, tore it all down. And then that's where Bethlehem Steel's oxygen furnace, the newest modern furnace, was set up in that area. So it's complete, that neighborhood's completely gone, and there were churches, fire stations, barber shops, restaurants, schools, all gone. It was like a whole neighborhood got wiped out.
Wow. And that was on the east side.
Mm-hmm.
Firefighting and the history of it in Bethlehem, what an interesting topic. Tools and equipment. We talked about buckets. What about, and we talked about the fact that in the early days, no uniforms. So the problem mm-hmm. was how to keep the townies from just joining mm-hmm. in. You didn't know who was mm-hmm. trained and who mm-hmm. wasn't. And then they came along with uniforms, hats that would be fireproof. Is there... What other equipment are we talking about? The fire engines themselves, hoses that were not available at first.
Mm-hmm.
You had the nozzle and then eventually replaced with hoses.
Well, a lot of the companies started out as what they called hose companies. So like the Protection Company was known as Protection Hose Company Number 1, and they did not have a fire engine. All they had was a hose cart. So they would come to the fire with like a reel with hose on it, and there were hydrants by that time, and so they would hook into the hydrant and, you know, spray the fire, but there was no pumper. So they would either have to borrow, you know, they would have to call another fire company to come pump if they needed it, or, you know, if it was just... a fire on a first floor building, they could probably handle it. So there were hose carts, and they were some of them very ornate hose carts that they had purchased, and they were all fancy painting. They were very proud of these hose carts. Then there were ladder trucks, and the first ladder truck in Bethlehem wasn't until 1867. The borough had its own supply of ladders, and they were stored at the borough hall. But people tended to walk off with these ladders, and they kept, you know, telling people, you know, bring the ladder back when you're done. But they refused to listen. So eventually, they decided, oh, we need to have a ladder company with a ladder truck, and it needs to be, you know, under the control of a company that will manage the ladders. And so the Niskey Hook and Ladder Company was founded, and that was in. Along Market Street on east of New Street, and then one of the reasons they founded that was because they had just built a lot of brand new expensive mansions and churches in that area, and so they needed ladders to get to the upper levels of these places. Another tool that they would use was a hook, and that's why the companies were called hook and ladder companies. They would carry these long poles with a hook on the end, and that would be used to break windows. It would be used to open openings in roofs to get to where the fire was. They would also use their helmets as tools. The later helmets had metal plates on the front. And what they would do was use them to break windows, and the helmet, that metal plate, would also protect the fireman's head, obviously. Those helmets, the later style, which, you know, is similar to what they wear now, They're called a New Yorker style helmet. The back of the helmet is long, so it protects their neck from water and fire. They can also turn it around to protect their face if they want to. The new helmets, of course, are made of Kevlar and, you know, really strong modern materials. The older ones were made of leather, but still virtually the same style that they wear now. They would wear belts with their function within the fire company on it. So if it was a foreman or a brakeman or a chief, they would have that on the back of their belt. So at the scene of a fire, you could see who was in charge.
So many developments. Well, guess what? Our time is up okay. Here on Lehigh Valley Discourse for this week. I thank Nancy Ruttman and Karen Samuels for coming by and chatting with us. Their co-author of the book is Chris Aileen. It's Perseverance Publishing. Do you have a website that people could go to?
PerseverancePublishing.com.
That's easy.
You can find links to how to order the book. The book is also available on Amazon and at the Moravian Bookshop and other stores.
Excellent. Well, Karen and Nancy, thank you so much for being my guests this evening.
Thank you for having us.
What a fascinating story. And it's a beautiful book that is so well done. Again, softback, 136 pages, wonderful photographs. Our listeners will enjoy getting their own copy of this one. Well, that's it for Lehigh Valley Discourse this evening. I'm John Pierce, your host. Neil Heaver has been our engineer this evening. And until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.